Hey everybody, and welcome to the podcast No Root, No Fruit, a history of folk roots and Americana music, one record at a time. I'm your host, Matt Watroba. Each episode will explore an iconic and inspirational recording from the genre, and then feature an interview with someone who was moved to talk about it. If you enjoy this kind of thing, please check out the website, norootnofruit.com. Once there, you can read the transcripts for each episode, link to the recordings featured on that episode, and, of course, donate to keep these episodes coming.
Into every section and state of America. Their cause must be our cause too. Because it's not just Negroes, but really it's all of us who must overcome the crippling legacy of bigotry and injustice. And we shall overcome.
We shall overcome. Deep in my heart, I do believe we shall overcome. Though I join hands so often with students and others behind jail bars singing it, we shall overcome. Sometimes we've had tears in our eyes when we joined together to sing it, but we still decided to sing it. We shall overcome. No, before this victory is won, some will have to get thrown in jail some more, but we shall overcome.
It didn't happen that often that Pete Seeger misread an audience. In fact, few were better at the art of drawing a small or large crowd together, united by song and the sound of singers rising and blending together, hinting at the hope of a unified voice. Here's Pete explaining this technique from an interview I did with him in the autumn of 2008, in his 89th year.
I think, where's the tenors? Sing grace. I need some high tenors. How sweet.
Where's the basses?
The sound. And I just hold my hands up there while I sing that word sound.
Saved a wretch like me.
But in October of 1962, 8 months before his historic concert at Carnegie Hall, Pete found himself in Albany, Georgia, to give a concert and demonstrate the power of community singing for a cause. Now, Albany, Georgia in 1962 was the site of 1,000 arrests. They seemed poised for a race riot. Dr. King had been arrested along with dozens of other clergy, churches and crosses were burning, and Pete was answering an invitation to sing at a black church. The same evening, by the way, that James Meredith, accompanied by hundreds of National Guard soldiers, was registering as the first black student at the University of Mississippi. According to biographer David King Dunaway, Pete did something that night he didn't often do back then. He made a set list. He planned in advance what he would sing and what he would say about his experience adapting and singing songs for the labor movement. They were already singing when he arrived.
Freedom in the air.
In fact, a strong singing movement was already in place, and it didn't take long for Pete to realize that there would be more to learn here than there would be to teach. Between the spontaneous musical outbursts, Pete heard horrific stories of the struggles going on in the area, and then more singing.
Ain't gonna let nobody do it. Turn me round, turn me round, turn me round. Ain't gonna let nobody do it. Turn me round, keep on a walking, keep on a talking, marching up the freedom lane. Ain't gonna let segregation.
Here it is in Pete's words, quote, "There I was, repeating the same unrhythmic melody over and over again with little or no variation. I sang with a deadpan expression, purposely not to detract from the words, and this only made the melody seem more boring to them." Unquote. Well, the only song that seemed to land with the audience was We Shall Overcome, a song Pete had a hand in adapting from an old spiritual that was changed for the labor movement and again for the civil rights movement. It was during the performance of this song Pete gave it all to the audience to sing. Pete spent the rest of his life thinking back to that concert as a failure. Out of this failure, though, Pete's commitment to singing these songs and spreading the message of the movement strengthened. He learned what all great song leaders learn at some point. These songs, this act of singing together, is not about the song leader, it's about the singers. He had a chance to show off what he learned in front of a sold-out crowd on June 8, 1963, at New York City's Carnegie Hall. And, lucky for us, Columbia Records was there to record the entire evening. When We Shall Overcome was released in 1963, the LP contained 36 minutes and 58 seconds of a program, when unedited was actually 9 minutes short of an hour and a half. Almost 45 minutes was cut to fit the long play format. That was all we had to go on until 1989, when an expanded version came out as an unedited 2-CD set. It was called We Shall Overcome, the Complete Carnegie Hall Concert. Throughout our time together, I'll be referring to both of these releases. It's just too hard not to, but I'll stick to the original one as much as possible. The civil rights movement wasn't the only thing Pete Seeger sang about on June 8, 1962 at Carnegie Hall, but that is how the 1963 version begins.
If you miss me at the back of the bus, you can't find me nowhere. Oh, come on over to the front of the bus. I'll be riding up there. I'll be riding up there. I'll be riding up there. Oh, come on over to the front of the bus. I'll be riding up there.
While Pete was in Albany, Georgia, the autumn before, he took notes like a journalist on the songs being sung. All the variations and versions he could collect.
And he said, "Pete, you'd have to see it to believe it. They have a little dance down there." He says, "I don't even know the name. I found since it's called the Wobble." But he says, "They do a song with it. You see, there's a, they start with a twist and then a step back and a step forward and a hesitation somewhere." He says, "But they all sing, I ain't scared of your jail, cause I want my freedom, I want my freedom, I want my freedom. I ain't scared of your jail, cause I want my freedom, I want my freedom now." He says you have to see it, though, to see how it...
And of course, he included the tried and true spirituals co-opted and adapted to reflect what was going on down there, even while this concert was taking place.
The only thing that we did right was the day we begun to fight. Keep your eyes on the prize. Hold on, hold on, hold on, hold on, hold on. Keep your eyes on the prize. Hold on. Oh, sing it again. Oh, freedom. Oh, freedom, freedom. Oh, freedom.
If it sounds like the audience catches on quickly, it's because Pete had a whole gang of singers rehearsed and on stage, but that didn't seem to intimidate the singing audience in the slightest. In the unedited version of the concert, this set of songs from the Movement closed out the first half. Prior to this, Pete warms up the audience with a banjo tune, sings a couple of old ballads, a Woody Guthrie children's song, and then introduces the audience to the relatively new songwriting voices of Melvina Reynolds, Bob Dylan, and Tom Paxton.
To me, one of the wonderful things of the past couple years is to see a whole batch of young people coming along who decided that they'd do just like Woody Guthrie did, make up songs about everything that happens. First is by a young fellow named Tom Paxton.
I played that clip just in case Tom was listening to the podcast. He told me once he just can't get enough of Pete calling him young. On the LP, Paxton's What Did You Learn in School Today is up next.
What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? I learned our government must be strong. It's always right and never wrong. Our leaders are the finest men, and we elect them again and again. And that's what I learned in school today. That's what I learned in school today.
Although many of the songs Pete introduced that night are considered folk standards now, you can tell by the fresh reaction from the crowd that they were most likely hearing them for the first time. That includes the Melvina Reynolds classic, Little Boxes. Notice there is no applause when the song starts.
Little boxes on the hillside, little boxes made of ticky-tacky, little boxes, little boxes, little boxes all the same. There's a green one and a pink one and a blue one and a yellow one, and they're all made out of ticky-tacky, and they all look just the same.
And then the reaction when it's over.
There's a green one and a pink one and a blue one and a yellow one, and they're all made out of ticky-tacky, and they all look just the same.
Side one ends with a perfectly paired set of songs. Who Killed Norma Jean, a poem by Norm Rostin set to music by Pete, and Bob Dylan's Who Killed Davy Moore, a song about the boxer who died from injuries sustained in the ring about 2.5 months before this concert.
Who killed Norma Jean? I said the city as a civic duty. I killed Norma Jean. Who saw her die? I said the night and a bedroom light. We saw her die. Who killed Davy Moore? How come he died and what's the reason for? Not I, says the referee. Don't point your little finger at me. Sure, I could have stopped it in the eighth and saved him from his terrible fate. But the crowd would have booed, I'm sure, at not getting their money's worth.
Side two opens with Bob Dylan's A Hard Rain's A-Gonna Fall. Dylan wrote this song the summer before and debuted it on the Carnegie Hall stage in the autumn of 1962 as part of a big hootenanny organized by Seeger. It appeared on Dylan's second studio recording, The Freewheelin' Bob Dylan, released just a short 2 weeks before this Seeger performance.
And I'll stand on the ocean until I start sinking, but I'll know my song well before I start singing. And it's hard, 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 hard. It's a hard rain's gonna fall.
The 1963 LP continues with Woody Guthrie's Mail Myself to You. It sounds like the audience is hearing that one for the first time as well. Same with the song that has become a Pete Seeger classic, Guantanamera. Not the first New York City performance, but close. Pete performed it a month earlier on the same stage as part of the Weavers reunion concert.
Once more, Guantanamera. Guajira, Guantanamera. Guantanamera, Guajira, Guantanamera.
The record concludes with the title track, We Shall Overcome, edited down to 5 minutes and 58 seconds from the original 8 minutes 14. On the unedited version, 90 seconds of that is enthusiastic applause. That's because it was the second set closer, but not the end of the concert. Pete came back to play two Lead Belly songs, Mr. Tom Hughes's Town and Bring Me Little Water, Sylvie, before bringing the house down with Guantanamera. When I originally reached out to my friends and acquaintances in the folk music community to comment on their personal choices for most influential record, Pete Seeger's We Shall Overcome made several short lists. No one was as enthusiastic as John McCutcheon.
Well, may the world go, the world go, the world go. Well, may the world go when I'm far away. Well, may the world go, the world go, the world go. Well, may the world go when I'm far away.
Born in Wisconsin in 1952, John discovered old-time Southern music in his 20s. He toured throughout the South, soaking up the traditions and learning the songs. He became a prolific songwriter, releasing over 40 albums since his original release in 1975.
If I were a feather bed, all in your house if I'm, well, I'd hold you in my arms each night and keep you warm in the winter time.
Multi-instrumentalist, storyteller, recording artist, and stage performer, John McCutcheon is revered as one of the best the folk music world has to offer. He has lived up to that reputation for decades. I asked John if he remembered hearing We Shall Overcome for the first time.
Oh, I can tell you exactly when it was, because it was July 1st, 1966. And I know that because my youngest brother was born on that day. I was the eldest of, or still am, the eldest of nine. And my mother had 8 kids in 9 years. And then she took a 5-year, what she thought was the end, it turned out to merely be a hiatus. And she went to the hospital, and I was 13, so I was old enough to sort of be left in charge. So I left my sister Mary, the next in line, in charge of the other 6, and I schwinned my way down to the main music store in our little hometown, and I bought this album. Was the first album I ever bought with my own money, saved up for my paper route. It was the Pete Seeger We Shall Overcome album. And I didn't know who Pete Seeger was, but I knew the song because it had been on the news. And this was not the kind of thing that you didn't hear music on the news. But my mother had made me sit down 2 years earlier, or 3 years earlier, and watch the March on Washington.
The connection between hearing the song We Shall Overcome on the news and then on the record ran deep.
It sounded like a hymn, but I knew it wasn't a hymn. I grew up in a very religious family, so I knew lots of hymns. But I also knew that hymns, almost without fail, rely on singular pronouns. And this song had the spiritual heft of a hymn, but it was plural. And that was really powerful. So I wanted that song. And I took it home, and we had that iconic appliance of the 1960s, the hi-fi, you know, with a little crappy television in the middle and a crappy radio on one side and a crappy phonograph on the other. And I sat down and I listened to this album, and it was not at all what I expected. I don't know really what I expected, but it was a live recording, of course, of a concert. And I had never been to a concert, so I didn't know what happened at them. This was a complete surprise. I thought I knew what concerts were, a big bunch of people watching somebody show off. And this wasn't that at all. I mean, the first song or two was Pete, you know, playing the banjo and singing Lady Margaret. But then he got everybody singing, and it was remarkable.
Georgia loves us.
Excellent.
you know, harmony and everything, and people singing at the, you know, just singing out. And I grew up Catholic, and I didn't know that human beings could sound that way, just being so invested in the music. And then there was the songs themselves, and he sang a whole bunch of songs by other writers. It took a long time for him to sing a song that he had written. And if you think about it from this perspective now, how many people who write songs would go out there and do the entire first half of their show with traditional songs and songs composed by other people? Pete, from the very beginning, had a different mission. I remember that being the day after the 10th listening of this album. At first, I wanted to be a part of that audience. And then I thought, I want to do that. I want to be able to create this event that involves people and moves people and brings the world inside and tells everybody that I'm not doing this on my own. Here's Bob Dylan. Here's, you know, Tom Paxton.
Beyond the incredible scope of the songs and traditions on We Shall Overcome was the opportunity to be witness to pure stagecraft, the programming of the sets and the focus on participation.
I think any performer who's paying attention to the craft of understanding that a concert is your entire time on stage. It's not just a set list. It's what ties these things together. It's how the context of one song informs another. Going to a Pete Seeger concert was going into a university classroom. Whether it be this, and this is interesting because as the years went on and I learned more about this performance, he actually had a choir of people behind him on the stage that had, you know, when I heard Shotsolasa, and I thought, oh my God, people are just making this up as they go. No, it was rehearsed. And it was part of the power of encouraging people to sing songs that they hadn't heard. It's something that people aren't as apt to do these days, unfortunately. I think that part of it, it's one reason that I so mulishly include songs that everybody, because it's kind of like, look what we did. You know, a concert, if you want to get word nerdy about it, can be defined as one guy showing off for a big crowd of people. The other is we do things in concert with one another. And Pete provided that definition for me. And yeah, a lot of Pete's albums were live concert recordings. And I listened to a lot of them. So I don't think it would be unfair to say that I and a lot of people learned how to do what we do by learning from Pete's example, which was so highly skilled. I can tell you as an instrumentalist, he's a superb and inventive banjo player, a really solid 12-string player, great singer. I mean, listening back to this thing this morning in prep for this conversation, you know, leading around, here's to you, my rambling boy, way up there. And I performed with Pete when he couldn't do that anymore.
Right.
Oh, here's to you, my rambling boy. May all your rambles bring you joy.
When you find me in your mailbox, cut the string and let me out. Wash the glue off of my fingers, stick some bubble gum in my mouth. Take me out of my wrapping paper, wash the stamps off of my head. Pour me full of some ice cream sodas, tuck me into a nice warm bed. I'm gonna wrap myself in paper.
Again, as I was listening, I realized that this may have been the first time that a lot of people heard say, mail myself to you. And he does a great version of that. And the audience reacts as though they've never heard it. I mean, they're laughing during the verses. And it's really, at least on the CD, really extended applause at the end of that song. More than most songs. And you just thought, wow, this is really what Thomas Merton calls the virgin point for a lot of this stuff. I mean, where else would a bunch of New Yorkers hear if you miss me at the back of the bus? It made what was going on down there real, because this was art coming out of that experience. And it would never be reported on in the news or they weren't going to read it in the New York Times. No, they had to come to a Pete Seeger concert to make all that real and human.
In a quote from one of Pete Seeger's columns in Sing Out magazine, Pete criticized his own recorded output as, quote, one of the most uneven bodies of recorded music that any performer could boast of or perhaps be ashamed of. If one could dub onto a tape a few songs from here or there on his many LPs, one might have quite a good one-hour tape of Pete Seeger. The trouble is, no two people would make the same selections. Therein lies his defense.
I don't think you can judge a Pete Seeger album like you judge a Bruce Springsteen album. You know, why is he putting that song? Because he's recorded it three different times. His live albums were, as you say, you know, studies in not only in performance, but in community building. I think that what Pete's albums did is they made you feel like this whole revival, which he helped spawn, and which is when so many people discovered him, was about participation. And, you know, when I first started going around and playing, that sense was still there in many of the folk music societies. You know, oh, yeah, some guy's coming through, we'll put on a show. But really what we're doing is we're holding weekly or monthly jam sessions or singing sessions. Or we're doing a thing where we're going to teach people how to play the guitar by just being in a big group and playing real nice and slow. And you can, you know, it was a social activity.
The best verse was made up down in Montgomery, Alabama. Says we are not afraid. And here you and I up here, and like every human being in the world, we have been afraid. But you still sing it. We are not afraid. We are not afraid. We are not afraid. We are not afraid.
No Root, No Fruit is written, produced, and hosted by me, Matt Wotroba. I absolutely love researching and putting these shows together, but as you can imagine, it's quite a bit of work. Your support is needed to keep these shows coming your way. Please check out the website norootnofruit.com to leave comments, read more about the albums and the artists, follow links to the recordings mentioned, and most importantly, make a donation. If just a small portion of you do that, we might be able to keep this ad-free. Thanks so much for listening.